Welcome back to Musings of a Book Collector. This is episode number 5 of the episodes that we have been giving on Masechtas Chulin, where we deal with the Svarim and the authors of the incredible literature on this very big and relevant Masechta, Chulin. By way of introduction, if you have any comments or feedback on the previous episodes, it does not have to be positive. More than happy to hear from you at eliezerbrot@gmail.com. So in the first few episodes, we're discussing about Elder Hadani, Hilchos Eretz Yisrael, early works on the Masechta. And in the last episode, we already reached to a Yid, Reb Shmuel Jama, who wrote a work all about Shechita and a lot of aspects of Chulin. And that is what we started talking about in the previous episode. But there we were more focusing on getting up to discuss what there is about this person, when exactly he lives. And basically, to date him, he will be somewhere in the... He's active, let's say the Aruch dies in 1103, which is close to around when the Aruch finished his work. So within a 40-year period of time, it seems he authored a work called Agur, which we spoke about some aspects of that work in the previous episode, concluding with when Shlomo Buber in 1888 publishes it in the Sefer HaYovel L'Chvayd Gretz. So we mentioned already last time that this Reb Shmuel Jama wrote a massive work on Shechita, but it's not really used so much for the Shechita aspects. And the question is when this changes, and that will be, and what is this work? What is an in-depth dive into the Sefer? What will that tell us? What's the story with this fascinating Sefer? So that's the main focus of today. But just to pick up from where we ended off, so we were talking about Buber. Is anyone else that talks about this Yid? So there are many other short, brief comments from different people. One other person worthy to mention is a fellow I'm very fond of, Rav Avram Harkavy. Rav Avram Harkavy learned in Valozhin, maintained a relationship with the Netziv afterwards, possibly even assisted the Netziv with the getting a manuscript to the Shultis, but definitely we have correspondences between them, and in general we have other correspondences with other Gedolim. He helped Gedolim, and I hope to write about him in the near future. In relationship with his, with what he did with for Valozhin especially, but some other aspects. But the point is that this Harkavy was beyond prolific. He was expert in Gaonim, manuscripts, he was holding in all different things, he wrote everywhere, he answered questions from inquiries that he got from all over. And so, of course, he also added in his 2 cents on this topic, and one just cute thing that he talks about, which is, plays out, and it's called the Agur on the Aruch. That's his go. And sometimes he's referred to Reb Shmuel the Baal Agur, or Reb Shmuel Agur even. So the answer, what does this mean? So the point is that Agur, it means gathering of wisdom. That's what it's referring to. And basically, that is how one would describe what he did in the work, let's say, on the Aruch. Although some people, it's not a massive work on the Aruch, and maybe he intended to add much more to it. But the point is, it's a gathering wisdom. So what Harkavy does is he collects a bunch of places, like a basically his database of this one, how to show that Agur means this of the term Agur refers to gathering. Okay, he deals with it elsewhere in his other writings. Okay, that's not important for us right now. Now to get closer to Elder Hadani for a minute, and to the work on Shechita. So we said already that Steinschneider points out that this work mentions Elder Hadani and aspects of Shechita, but that seemed to be not so much the focus for many people until 1891. Avram Epstein, who we spoke about already more at length, who is obsessed with the topic of Elder Hadani, he gets a hold of the manuscript and he does use and collect all the materials, the various passages, which is maybe 10, maybe even more passages where he deals with at length the Elder Hadani aspects in Shechita Treifus. So Avram Epstein deals with it in comparison with his greater story of Elder Hadani. So this gets us to 1891. Does anyone else talk about it? So 1908, there's another edition. This one, this time it's in English, from Yitz Schlossberg, who puts out a quote-unquote critical edition of Elder Hadani. He also he's aware of the essay from Steinschneider, he's aware of Epstein's materials, and it seems he also got a copy of the manuscript. So, but again, the whole story of this Reb Shmuel at this point is still only in relationship with Elder Hadani. But the actual Sefer, what's going on in the Sefer, other than that original essay that Steinschneider pulled out, and he didn't even know who he was writing about, no one really talks much about. Fast forward to the year 1976, a Yid from Nissen Levy, he writes a master's in the University of Tel Aviv. It seems Professor Benedict recommended this work. And he wrote it under him, and he was assisted by others, translating from the Arabic one chapter. Okay, it's quite some time from the last time that it was really even discussed. Okay, so a chapter finally comes out in the Shechita aspects. Then there's a Yid, which we quoted already also a few times, Nachman Danzig. He wrote this massive work on, he's one of the world's leading experts on Gaonim. And he wrote a work, Hilchos Psukais, Mavi Hilchos Psukais, and every single possible thing that could do with Gaonim, Rishonim, somewhere is buried in that work. There's nice indexes. And yes, he also somehow was aware of this manuscript and quotes it a few times. But again, no real discussion, not even a discussion of who he is, what's buried in the Sefer, is found in the work. Fine. Now, there was one of the Gniza experts, one of the people that was involved with traveling the world, photocopying different materials all over. It was a Yid, Nechemia Aloni, a fascinating story about him. He even wrote an autobiographical account of his travels and his research, but that's for a different episode. But the point is, one of the things that he picked up when he was, over the years, in his travels, his academic travels, so to speak, is many Jewish library lists found in the Middle Ages in the Kairo Gniza. So he had a dream to like put them all together, and then he could see, you know, what works were out. It's helpful to see, you know, let's say we want to know how many, what did Reb Sadia Gaon write? So we have no real list, you know, there's no list published, okay, he wrote these things, and then they got lost. The way, one of the clues that detectives of the Gniza, so to speak, I'm just using that term, used to find out such information would be through these types of lists. So he printed a bunch of these lists over time, and the idea was he's going to print a massive book with footnotes and everything. Sadly, he worked on it, but I don't think that he was able to complete it. His people that were Talmidim of his and associates of his, they brought it to print a bunch of years ago. And now, looking in this book, there's indexes, but to be fair, the indexes are not the greatest, but it basically is, we do find mentioned 2-3 times that the work of Igeres HaMaifas existed in, you know, it existed. You have to understand that in those days, in the period of time from after it was written, there's no Svarim stores, so people would have to order a copy, and that's a story that we has to be discussed at length at a different time, at Svarim in those days. What does it even mean? But the point is, if once you see that this Yid's work is mentioned in 3 different independent lists, okay, it means something, but it doesn't mean much. But the point is that what for me is, for our story today, is that we have in a work that's published in 2006, a mention of 3-4 mentions of his work. Fine, fast forward to, we mentioned already also, Micha Perry, who does his doctorate in Eldad Adani, so he also mentions and discusses a little bit, but again, only focusing Reb Shmuel's literature with Eldad Adani. And then, Yid Gershuni, back in 2012, publishes a different parak of this work. And then he publishes it actually in that chapter. It seems it was a chapter. It was a chapter was part of a paper that he had to do in Hebrew University under Yachmiel Brody. And that chapter again was published, self-published, whatever a chapter. You know, not too many people saw it. And then it's published in the Chitzei Gibayim Journal, Volume Tess, in 2016. Now, so basically is, you see these crumbs that one chapter was randomly published by one person, one chapter is published by someone else. Okay, nothing doing. Fine, fast forward, 2018, Mechon Yerushalayim, this Levi that wrote the Masters, decides he's coming back to Eretz Yisrael. He knows Arabic, his whole story. He's a Rav in different places, and he decides that he's going to finally go back to publishing the whole Sefer. And we have I personally have Mordechai Karo Sotayv after learning through the Sefer for him bringing to light this lost Gadol. Fine, that's 2018. And then just one more stop is that Rabbi Zaini, who's trying to work on the Itzar Gainim, besides for the project that Rabbi Brody and his people are working on, so he issued a Eitzer Ga'inim HaChulin, and he also quotes what we're going to see, Ga'inik material that's buried in this work in Igeres HaMaifas, but based on the 2018 edition. Okay. Now, so the question is, so now we're getting to the point of, we're talking Masechta Schulin and stuff like that. So the question is, what is the Meirdika thing that I'm so like excited? What does this relate to this Sefer, Igeres HaMaifis, and what's the story of the Sefer? Now, let me say, now, forget about all the bibliographical stories and what everyone. Let us look at the Sefer itself and what the story it tells us. And what I could say is that it's a remarkable Sefer. Not that he needs my Hasgama at all, Chas v'Shalom, he does not. But I will try to bring out various points and things of interest that one could see and learn from the Sefer. Now, obviously someone, not myself, who's an expert in the Lamdas and the Rishayim and the Gemara of Masechtas Chulin, backwards and forwards, would have a lot more intelligent things to say. There's a lot what to say, a lot what to process. I'm just pointing out a few points to make it interesting. Number one is like this. He publishes this. He not publishes in those days. He writes a Sefer. Now, why does he write a Sefer? So we have to understand something, which is that sometimes Sfarim were born because of a question. Someone made an inquiry. So we have such types of works, especially in the Gainan materials. Someone asked them a question, and through that we have Lamashal. I think Yigeres HaShir Gainan. There was a question asked, and basically that's how we have our history was written down. Not that the Gadol decided himself to write down the history, but it was written because of an inquiry. Now, it's sort of interesting is because we mentioned already even in a different episode that tshuva sometimes the gadol was asked the question, so he could just give an answer. Instead, what you find is that a gadol sometimes could give a 25-page thing. The answer is he had Torah on the topic. He has now an excuse to put it down to put it down. So someone maybe it will get printed eventually. Maybe it's like a sort of a shibud to put down the information. Okay, so this is a common thing, it seems, in the going of time, especially. Now, we have sometimes that something happened, an event happened, and someone asked them to do it. Most notably, there's a famous work, which we will be doing an episode about him soon enough. It's known as the Sefer Maisius, otherwise known as the Yafa Mea Yeshua, authored by Reb Nissen Gaon. Now, what we all know, and when you read the introduction of the Sefer, or the Shar, many times it says, he wrote it for his son-in-law, Donash, because to comfort him on a loss that he had. It seems he lost a child or something like that. This was a work to comfort him. So this is what it says. And says in the introduction also, and it seems to be authentic, although we are not sure who Donash is in the story. But the point is that today it's authentic, and Amir Tzashem, when we get to that, when I get to discussing the Sefer at greater length, we'll try to discuss a little bit more about it. But the point is that he felt to help out his son-in-law. Okay. We have Lamashal Rav Haigoin on Masechtas Brachos. It was also through a request of a friend, so to speak. Now, but here it's more than that. What it turns out is, it seems, from reading the introduction, that he was offered, it seems that a friend of his, he gives the name, but I don't think we know any information about the friend as of now, sponsoring him to put out a Sefer. Okay, so now my question, which I do not have an answer yet, although I have seen, I think that Ibn Ezra wrote works due to for sponsorship in that period of time, and we said he's a friend of his, but it seems he got a sponsor, plain and simple. So, now the sponsor, it seems from what he writes over here, was a learned person, and he felt that he would enjoy this topic that he's going to write about, which was a mimer about the Indian of, as he says it, Kashrus Baal HaChayim Atar. Now, in this passage, when he talks about the work, and I guess you call it the psicha, so he writes a few fascinating things. So number one is he sort of gives a karas ha-toiv to Hashem Yisbarach, his chesed that he does for him, and then he thanks this person to give him the chesed that this person is doing, that it's, and that's why it's pretty clear that he's getting financial help to put this out. And then he says, why am I doing it? Because I think your Yirah Shamayim and the chesed, and you're also your kishrin, you'll be able to understand it, etc., by putting this out. Now, so it does not sound like the person asked him to write a work on this and this topic. Now, he says it is that I don't want to put you to sleep, so to speak. So I chose what's called a Derech of Kitzer, not Arichus Nifla, to bring out the Piske Halacha from the Gemara, and what we got, and he calls it Mimayishra Abeinu Shekibun Piyagvura, and I divided it up into 10 chapters. But, So right away, one of the things that he says also in the beginning is, he says like this, and this is a very nice language, as I'll emphasize, he says, "Kfi she'anachnu smeichem b'limud Torasai, u'mizdarzim b'kriyasai, v'yadiyas chukeo v'nehega lefia." So you see a beautiful language of the hana and the simcha one's supposed to have when one learns, and this is feeding off of his introduction about b'chlal, about being to observe kashrus and the chashivas about it. So this is just to throw out there the famous, you know, are you supposed to have a no when you learn Torah? So here he says, mamash, you have a, it's Mardik HaSimcha. Everyone's fond of quoting, this is known as the Egli Tal and the Hagdama, if you're supposed to have a no from learning Torah or not. And then there is a Rebbe Ramana Ahar in the Dharam about learning Torah and having a no. So here we have yet another point, that the point of learning is to have, is with on the great Simcha. Okay. Now, so that is some brief remarks about why he goes out to do it, and it seems to be a common thing in those days. Now, what happens is, so what does he do first? Sorry. So he says, I'm going to break it down into 10 chapters. So first he discusses the types of animals that are kosher at great length. And in this chapter, which we will have to return to at a different time, is he deals with various Messiris and materials from Rasag. He even argues on Rasag and some of these things, and also later on in the Sefer he deals with, let's say, grasshoppers and other stuff like that. Okay, fine. Then he talks about how when is the time that it's mutter to shecht, based on the sugyas. Then what animals, how you shecht the animals, what type of person is the shechet, what about the sakin, all different aspects, the place, which animals are kosher, and then obviously in great length about Hilchos Nikur, Treifus, and he also deals with fish and grasshoppers and stuff like that also in this work, Kisi Adam. Now, so at first glance, one might say, okay, big deal. So what does he do? He reads the Masechta. This is a Masechta that is a lot of, has the whole point of these episodes is to show that there's a ton of literature about them, and he writes a sefer about it. Big deal. What am I even being so excited, so to speak, about this sefer? So first of all, what I will say in broad strokes is like this: he demonstrates an incredible bekiyas in this masechta. Now you have to understand, there's nothing around Kemat at this time. This is one of the first works. Let's assume, and we're going to see that he did have Gainic material. It wasn't like, you know, you went into the Svarim, so you said, okay, I'm learning Masechta Schulin, load me up on all the Svarim, give me the Ramban, the Rajba, the Ritva, give me, you know, what we're going to see, the vast literature. There's almost nothing. Even the bits and pieces that they have from the Gaonim, there's almost nothing. He shows it, he demonstrates an incredible understanding of the Masechta. That's first of all. He quotes Tosefta Keseder. He quotes Teiras Kehanim Keseder. He quotes Yerushalmis, no, not Yerushalmi Kachim, but your other Yerushalmis. He quotes Medrash for some points. So you see here a person that he's familiar with the Jewish literature at that time, and which is a remarkable thing, knowing this Masechta back and forth. Now, it's very possible that Shechita, because, and part of my whole point is, especially way, way back, it was beyond relevant, so he knew this Masechta crazy well. That could be. I don't know his, although he demonstrates knowledge in other parts of Kachem for many rayas that he brings and other Masechtas also, but I'm not telling you what he knows about another in, let's say, Yavamis. I'm not here to judge that. I could judge and see what he says over here, and it shows that he's fully trained in learning. He mentions Vikuchim that he had in Halacha with other people a few times. He mentions his father, and we have other sources that show his father was a Dayan and Talmud Chacham. Now, he's Mayrich many times, even though he says that he's taking some form of Kitzur. Sometimes one wonders what does Kitzur and what does Mayrich mean for different people. Well, I will say is that he's not Mayrich every single prat, especially Lamashal. I was looking for someone that's written, we mentioned already in the previous episode, the Itur, which quotes him. So the Itur does also have an Arichas on the Sugyas, and it's also one of the earliest works in the times of Rishayim that we have on that relates to this. And it's not just, you know, okay, you could shecht at this and this time, and this time you cannot shecht, and that's it. There's a give and take a lot of times in the Sugya. So by him, there is a lot of, as I said, there's a lot of give and take in this again. Well, it reminds me a lot when I'm reading the Sefer. First, it's written very well. Now, again, I'm reading it in Hebrew, and the translator, I think, did a good job. Again, I'm not comparing it to the Arabic, which is on the side. It's way beyond my pay grade, and I would have to wait to hear a review from an expert on Arabic if this guy did a good job, didn't do a good job. But bottom line is, this Sefer reminds me of the Maspik or Rav Ramban Rambam on Tefillah. And what I'm trying to bring out is like this: when sometimes you don't find Rishonim, that you get to hear, you get to see them as a person. They talk. It's like somewhat, I guess, you emotional, not an emotional sense that that's why he's passing a certain way. You get to see the person, what his mind. He opens you. He brings you into what the sugya is about. How he reads it up. Oh, it's not so simple. This conclusion. It's a Gemara, and there's a this, and then how you read it, and back and forth. There's a give and take over here, and there's a lot happening in the Sefer. Many, many details of how he brings it. Now, it's clear he also had knowledge of medical materials, and he quotes some science from the period of time. He was well-versed in it. He has an understanding of animals, which might show that maybe this was his expertise. So who knows? Maybe he was a doctor. I saw someone once, somewhere in the people writing about it. Again, a lot of times you could say this. We have to have more evidence. We don't have. One of the things, it's written well and appears to be translated very well, is that it's sad it does not have maftechas to show us through the sugya what's happening. And that would have been very, very useful to have a discussion, to be able to look up, oh, what does he say, daf beis? What does he say, daf gimel? Okay. Now, one of the things that one could point out, which again needs to be explored, is what's the relationship? The Rambam is written right afterwards. They're looking in a shitchistic oifen. One would wonder, did the Rambam see this work? Which is very possible. He would have. He could have. Rambam saw a crazy amount of literature. And does the modeling of how the Rambam, who's an architect in galus and structure, how he did Machalos Esuris and Shechita, if any of this is done, it would was influenced by this work? Again, maybe, who knows, it would require a massive Talmud Chacham holding Gans Rambam and the Sefer and then to be able to see. But we see is that this work actually is structured beautifully. And he has the Masechta perfectly clear in his mind, and he's able to ping pong back and forth what is going on in the Masechta as it relates to the 10 chapters that he has, and then he divides them into sub-chapters. So he does a remarkable job of that. Now, another thing, and this is what really is the exciting part for a lot of people, is what's the world that you see over here. So it's not just, okay, there's a person that lived in this time, a good friend of the Ben Ezra, wrote a Sefer, whatever, and the Torah also knew him, Shkaya. The world of Gainim comes alive over here. And that is something that I will try to bring out, how the world of Gainim and what we see about the world of Gainim in this work, and some small points of his in Masechtas Chulin. Now, just to say one ha'ara that I saw by him that I felt is also very, very nice, and that is like this. When you begin Masechtas Chulin, so right away you look at the different introductions, and they tell you, for those that, such as myself, that don't know anything about Shechita, so there's five principles of Shechita. One's called Shia, Drasa, Chalda, Hagrama, and Iker. Now, Shia meaning pausing, then there's chopping, then there's burrowing, veering beyond the Shecht Abel area, as it's translated, is Hagrama, and Ikur is ripping. And these are Halacha L'Moshe Sinai, and this is how to Shecht. These are like the most basic things you have to know about Shechita. Now, and you have to understand them. And if you pause at any given period of time, it makes the Shechita Psula. Okay, and this is what the literature deals with explaining what it is, and one kedai to see the Metzias. I think there are already videos up online on Oldaf a little bit to explain this, and I'm sure there's others, and the picture books are very helpful with this. Now, so when you learn the Gemara, Mamish, in the beginning of the Masechta, Daf Beis, Amud Beis, so as the Gemara tends to do, it goes on to different topics right away, as it delves into the Mishnah and talks about when the Mishnah says Akol Sheichtin, and it deals with Chutz of the Cheresh Sheitev Katan, and the Mishnah and the Gemara does what it famously does throughout Shas, goes into all different things. At one point, the Gemara talks about the Shechita of the Cheresh Sheitev Katan, if it's going to be good, and it says, it says like this: Chutz Micharei Shoyz Gotten Dafilu Bechulin Grade the Yevan Nami Loi Shama Yishu. Where our concern is Shama Yishu, Shama Yidrasu, Veshama Yachlu. So right away, what does this mean? It means is that our concern why their shechita will only be good b'di'eved is we're nervous about these three things. We need someone to have seen what happened with these three things. Now, what are those three things? Shia, Hadrasa, and Chalda, which we said just now. Those are the three areas of shechita, but we mentioned that there's five. What about, why is there no mention of five? So already Taisvis over here says that the reason is because the last two, Agrama and Iker, those we don't need someone to be there to see. You say Shia, there's no way to know after you look at the animal that there was that Shia took place. These two of the five, you don't need someone to be there. It's Nicker that the person did it. He didn't check in the proper area or he ripped it out. So Taisus already says that's why the Gemara doesn't talk about five, right? Because anyone knows on Hilchos Shechita there's really five things. So the point is that this piece of Taisus, so Reb Shmuel has this written out beautifully in a few paragraphs. Explain once he's talking about this predates Taisus, and the point is in a whole different region and how he just brings it out of a pashut. He's taught that this the five methods. There's the five main points of Shechita. This. So what's Shaila the Gemara, you might ask, and he sets it up in a whole beautiful form, like when you read the Taisus, so fine, great. The Taisus says a line, and you might miss it, and you might not be focusing on it, whatever. Or some people do, whatever. But here, Kalach HaYad, he brings this out, this shows, a lot of times, and the Rishayim, this shows how, his mind, as he's learning the Gemara, as he's telling you the halachas, quickly throw in a diuk in the Gemara, a very nice pashup shot, but tzimzach, as they say. Okay. Now, Mirtz Hashem, in the next episode, I will discuss the vast literature and points that we see in him about the Gainim, a short episode of Mirtz Hashem that we'll deal with next time.